Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from India is Arpinder Singh. Arpinder is the Indian Emerging Markets Leader for EY Forensic and Integrity Services. Arpinder, thanks for joining us today in your morning and my evening.
Thank you so much, Adam, and good evening your time.
Thank you, and good morning yours. So first, I thought it would be good if you could give an overview of the key compliance risk areas for global companies that are operating in India.
Thank you so much for this, Adam. I think there have been a lot of changes in India around regulations, which become very, very important. If you look at CARO 2020, which is popularly known as the Companies Auditors Report Order 2020, there have been significant changes which come into place from March 2021. It was supposed to take place from March 2020, but because of COVID, it got pushed out by a year. It puts a lot more onus on the statutory auditor. The statutory auditor has to comment on Benami companies. Benami companies basically is another word for shell companies. It also puts a lot of onus on the auditor to report on whistleblower complaints. They have to talk about fraud by third parties, fraud by the company, fraud by management. They have to go into much more detail on the whistleblower complaints. There is already a reporting requirement by the auditor based on certain parameters under the Companies Act, where they have to inform the government. So that puts a lot more onus on the auditor. And also it puts a lot more tension between the auditor and the company, especially as it relates to global companies, because global companies do a lot of their investigations under legal privilege. Now the question comes in, what amount of information can they share with the local auditor in India? Because most of these investigations are conducted by global law firms sitting outside India. It's going to be a lot of pull and push, but I think things will become clear over the next few months. On top of that, you've got the Data Privacy Bill 2019, which is sitting out there. It hasn't yet been approved fully by the government, but it's out there, and I think it will change the parameters around data privacy, even how investigations are done, considering confidentiality of information, personal information. So everybody is waiting for this to come into law. Then you've got the SEBI, which is the Securities Exchange Bureau of India, which is the regulator which looks at listed entities. And they've come out with a very interesting new change in regulations, which talks about actually unpublished price-sensitive information, which means there was a lot of insider trading risks which were out there, where people were sharing information on listed entities prior to them being published. And that was quite rampant, as was believed. And I think the regulator has come down very, very strictly on that. The second very controversial new change is where SEBI has said for listed companies, any whistleblower complaint which is initiated, a forensic audit is initiated, it has to be reported back to the regulator. And when the forensic audit is completed, the complete report has to be submitted to the regulator. That totally changes the way investigations are done and governance is looked at. On top of that, you have the Prevention of Corruption Amendment Act 2018, which actually made a big change by putting a lot of onus on the bribe giver. Historically, the Indian statute had only been focused on the bribe receiver, which is generally a government official. But now bringing in the corporates, it has increased its ambit. And also the liability for directors and officers, including timeline for trials, everything has been made significantly stricter. I'd like to mention a few more statutes which have changed. One is the Fugitive Economic Offenders Act 2018, which basically looks at, you know, there was a general perception that a lot of Indians who have potentially cheated or there's been theft have run out of the country, very difficult to bring them back, put them on trial. And I think the Fugitive Economic Offenders Act was to act as a deterrent to potentially reduce some of this people fleeing the country and not coming onto trial or being held responsible for some of their bad acts. I would like to talk a little bit about the Competition Amendment Bill 2020. Obviously, in the last few years, antitrust actions have significantly increased in India. It used to be historically very low as compared to the EU or other regions. I think the main change in the Competition Amendment Bill 2020 has been the fact that it empowers the Director General of CCI or Competition Commission of India for investigation and imprisoning a culprit and imposing heavy fines on individuals. So it really makes them Really become a lot more aggressive than they were and give them a lot more power. Also, recently we've seen a lot of investigations happen by the CCI on different sectors within India. From a regulator perspective, obviously, one thing I would like to highlight is the Central Vigilance Commission. The Central Vigilance Commission is one of the apex bodies which looks at corruption, and they have actually promoted the implementation of ISO 37001 in its newsletter. Recently, there have been some public sector companies which have actually taken the lead in India on implementing ISO 37001 from an anti-bribery and corruption perspective. So I think there is a lot of movement in the area of anti-corruption. I would like to close this question answer by talking about whistleblowing. I mean, you cannot stop any topic in India without talking about whistleblowing. And I think the main thing around whistleblowing is that the Companies Act now provides some security for whistleblowers. It puts down regulations and parameters around whistleblowing. It also puts the audit committee and directors responsible to make sure that the whistleblowing mechanism works properly. You've got the Security Exchange Bureau of India, SEBI, as I had mentioned earlier, which also has parameters around whistleblowing and the do's and don'ts. I think we could do a lot more around protecting the whistleblower, but I think right now the regulations are there, and I think they're becoming a lot more robust. I've seen that practically on the ground. And I forgot, there's one last topic I also wanted to make besides whistleblowers is CSR. CSR has become a bigger area in India, which is corporate social responsibility, especially during the pandemic with a lot of people doing charities, donations. I think it's very important to comply with the Companies Act section around having committees, etc., for CSR, and we do find that's a big risk and something which has to be tracked properly, because in India there is a tendency to do CSR for tax purposes or for disclosure purposes, and I think monitoring and governance around that needs to be strengthened, but the law is becoming tighter.
Well, thank you. And wow, that is just a lot of change for organizations to have to deal with. And on top of that, obviously, are all the pandemic related issues. You already mentioned, there was the CARA, I think you said, was postponed for a year because of the pandemic. Has the pandemic affected the risk profile in other areas as well?
I do think so, Adam. The pandemic has really changed the type of risks which are there in India. I think the number one risk which has changed is cyber. Cyber has always been a global risk, which most global companies have taken into account. But in India, it's always been kind of there, but not many people have done much around it, except for maybe the larger companies, which did a lot of work with global companies, like the IT industry, I think, was ahead of the curve in India. But I think the pandemic has expedited the cyber risks. There have been news every week in India in the newspapers around a different company getting a ransomware attack. I'm personally aware of a number of companies which have had ransomware issues where people have been asked for bitcoins to release portions of their network. Complete companies' infrastructures have been frozen for a few days. They've not been able to manufacture. This has never been the case in India. In fact, I've got a 1,000-member team, and I can tell you 60% of them are doing just cyber work now, which has never been the case earlier. So that, I would say, has been the number one risk, which has come because of work from home. And I think that has made it very easy for hackers to look at vulnerabilities and systems, which was never there earlier. People in India, generally, a lot of people don't have Wi-Fi at home, Adam, so they use their mobile phone, which further exposes the network. People were not used to laptops. A lot of the companies in India have still had desktops. So how do you, people started allowing people to dial in from their own devices at home, which further opened the risk. So I would say cyber, in my view, is number one. Second is internal processes of companies. Even if you take my own organization, now we don't sign a contract. We actually exchange confirmations on email. Now that opens up a different type of risk where policy and procedures need to be revised. So that's a second risk. Third risk is disputes. I mean, there's so much disruption in the supply chain, and there's so much happening in India. Like, unlike the global world where everything is rule-based, and if you have a dispute, you send a legal notice. In India, everything's a little bit trust-based. So I think people have woken up to the legal implications a little later. And I think now there's going to be so much more dispute and between the suppliers and customers and suppliers and OEMs. And I think that will lead to, again, a lot of fraud risk and compliance risk, because how do you settle these disputes? Who decides on that? And I think the last bit is, you know, everyone, including our survey, which we recently did at EY, it's called the EY Global Integrity Report 2020. It talks about the fact that in the pandemic, there's declining financial performance, there's disruption to traditional working patterns, and that puts a lot of pressure on the ethical way of working. And I'd like to pass it back to you, Adam, on this point.
Yeah, well, you ended with a very good point, which is that when there is a lot of stress, people do tend to make bad decisions, and that significantly increases the risk area. And it was interesting, as you were going through all these issues, you know, sitting in the U.S., it's not that different. I mean, right now there's been a wave of hospitals and other healthcare providers becoming victims of ransomware attacks, so much so that the FBI has been issuing alerts. Now, let me go back to one specific area that you talked on earlier, which is the issue of corruption. Are there particular sectors that are particularly dangerous or specific governmental interactions that global companies need to be particularly aware of the corruption risk?
I would say, Adam, the biggest areas or sectors in corruption as it relates to India, I think would be infrastructure and real estate. I would say metal and mining. If you notice, both these sectors have huge amount of manual intervention with the regulators, you know, whether they can operate within certain amount of time, whether cement can be moved from one state to another state late at night, what times can they work, the permissions they need for right of way when they're doing their infrastructure and real estate projects. They have to clear settlements at some point of time, which leads to a lot of dispute and heartaches. I think those are the sectors I would say are really topmost when it comes to corruption risks. I would say another area which has been recently in the news is defense and aerospace, especially because there's something called offsets where you need to engage with an Indian company as a part of insourcing in India. So I would say these, in my mind, would be some of the biggest risks in India from a sector perspective. I would like to highlight that India has always ranked around 80 on the Corruption Perception Index. And unfortunately, it hasn't changed much in the last 3-4 years. And I think I consider these surveys more as a perception. So there is a lot India could do from a perception perspective around bribery and corruption. Unfortunately, the laws still are there. They're fairly bureaucratic. There's a lot of interaction, though the government has been working really hard to put in e-licensing, reduce the number of licenses a person has to do, single window clearances. But I think there's still a lot of way to go. And I think till then, the companies have to really tighten their forts, as I would say, against bribery and corruption. And I think, unfortunately, with the pandemic, bringing it back to the pandemic, I think the problem has been people have been so focused on the business. They've said, hey, this is the pandemic, everything's allowed, and let me do a few, as I would say, naughty things, and no one will wonder and no one will hold me responsible because it's the pandemic. I think they forget that compliance is an issue at whatever time you say it. So I think it is a serious issue. Back to you, Adam.
Well, there's certainly a lot out there in terms of things for people to think about, and this was great insight into understanding where the risk areas are around corruption and how to avoid it, and also, you know, to communicate, as you said, against the message that just because the pandemic's happening doesn't mean you can suddenly get away with things. Well, Arpinder, thank you for spending so much time with us and sharing these insights. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.